I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Transportation for America ranked Metro Orlando as the most dangerous pedestrian metro city of the past decade. Organizations like Best Foot Forward are working to change that through a combination of law enforcement, education, and engineering throughout the area. I will speak with Amanda Day and Von Fusco from the Best Foot Forward Coalition, and also Sergeant Rich Ruth from the Orlando Police Department and Alice Shanks from Orange County Public Schools to talk more about pedestrian safety in the City Beautiful. Also, Dan McNichol is finishing up this year's Dire States Tour. He's travelling the country's highways in a 1949 Hudson to raise awareness about the state of the nation's infrastructure. I will speak with McNichol about the state of Florida's infrastructure compared to the rest of the United States and what could be done to improve it. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by Amanda Day. Amanda is the project director for Best Foot Forward. It's a coalition to improve pedestrian safety in Central Florida. Amanda, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Also joined by Von Fusco. Von was hit by a vehicle while crossing on foot across Colonial Drive back in 2012. Von, thank you very much for coming in.
No problem.
Also joining us in the studio is Orlando Police Sergeant Rich Ruth. Sergeant Ruth, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So, Amanda, I want to start with you. Transportation for America ranked Metro Orlando as the, quote, most dangerous pedestrian metro of the past decade, where on average two pedestrians are injured every day and one is killed per week. Those are pretty startling statistics. What are some of the challenges when you look at how to improve pedestrian safety?
That's a good question. First and foremost, you have to look at it as a design issue. Some will say it's a careless design. Central Florida was built really during the suburban boom of the 50s and 60s. So all the roads were built for drivers and not for walkers or bikers. And that's something that we're working on as a coalition of from an engineering side of looking at the planning and the engineering of the roads. Another big challenge here is, quite frankly, we're just not a walking culture or society. About a little over 1% of the people even walk to work in Central Florida. So when you're a driver, there's just not people out there walking. And when they are walking, quite frankly, you really just don't see them. And that's a huge challenge as well.
Well, Sergeant Ruth, would you describe us as a walking culture? Do you think that rings true? People just aren't really out walking that much?
No, they're not out walking that much. You have your runners and things like that, but nobody's walking to work. They're commuting. Now, eventually, they become a pedestrian once they get to their parking lot, parking garage, things of that nature, but usually a shorter walk. So we're basically a car-centric society. Mm-hmm. You look at just a sprawl of Central Florida. I personally live 30 miles away from where I work. Everybody drives. It's more convenient. And unfortunately, with the hustle and bustle, we want to move to work and from work as quickly as possible. And we're not paying attention.
So when you come to take a closer look at enforcement and trying to, not just enforce the laws as they pertain to, whether drivers should stop and give way to pedestrians, when and where they should do that. But is there an element of adjustment for the police officers or the sheriff's deputies involved to kind of getting their heads around the fact that pedestrians do have rights?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got to get our heads around that as law enforcement officers, as just commuters within our community. We have to understand that there are people walking, there are people on bicycles. We need to pay attention to that. Keep them in mind.
Well, Von, let me turn to you now. I want to ask you about your injury. Just can you walk us through what happened?
Yes. In Labor Day in 2012, I was hit by a Jeep crossing Rouse and 50. Mm-hmm. I had just gone off the Lynx bus with a new friend of mine, and we were crossing at a stoplight without a crosswalk. And a guy on his cell phone in a Jeep looked up, saw the light turn from red to green, probably didn't see us, and sped up and hit me and the other kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about your friend?
He is still alive. He was a little shorter, so he didn't get any head trauma, but he had his whole hip replaced. So
really?
He hurts every day while I don't hurt every day.
Do you remember much about the immediate aftermath of the accident?
I don't remember much at all, but what I was told is I had to relearn basically a lot of stuff. I had to relearn the alphabet. I learned how to walk again. I had to relearn a lot of stuff. It may have been easy because I had already learned it once, mm-hmm. but I still had to relearn a lot.
Was that frustrating?
I don't recall, but I'm guessing I was frustrated, but I didn't actually act out in frustration.
So how are you doing now? I mean, some 2 years on, are you doing okay?
Yeah, I'm starting school in the summer for at Valencia, so I'm doing decent.
Were you taking the bus? I mean, was that something you did every day? Would you describe yourself as a pedestrian leading up to that incident?
Yes. I didn't normally take the bus every day. My junior year, I took the bus a lot to school for ROTC and for the first half. And then after that, I just took my bike everywhere to school.
Now, what about your knowledge of how, what the rules of the road are? Would you have described yourself as a savvy pedestrian, sort of knowing what your rights were and what your responsibilities were before that accident?
I didn't know as much as I knew now. I don't say it was all my fault. I don't say it was all his fault. It was both of our faults. But I have definitely learned a lot since I was hit.
Mm-hmm. Has it made you more cautious, or are you
definitely,
wary about actually being a pedestrian now?
Yeah, like some of my friends want to just cross the street because there's no cars at all. Like, I don't care if I don't see a car for miles. If there's a crosswalk near, I take it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we spoke to Ella Shanks. She's the Senior Administrator of Curriculum and Instruction at the Orange County Public Schools, and she deals with programs taught to elementary school students to promote safe pedestrian habits. Let's take a listen to what she had to say about training kids to be savvy pedestrians.
We have adopted the Walk Safe curriculum, which has actually started in development back in 2001. It started down in South Florida, and it's been a process of expanding and trying out the curriculum until it's become what it is today. We adopted it here in our district a couple of years ago, and it consists of materials and curriculum that are used during our PE classes. The curriculum actually consists of 3 days of learning. It uses all three modalities of learning. It uses audio. There's videos for K-3 about Willy Whistle, and there's also a video for 4-5, for grades 4-5, titled Walking With Your Eyes. Mm-hmm. It also includes visual learning as well as motor learning. The students actually get out outside and they practice the techniques of walking and crossing the road at the appropriate places.
So that was Ella Shanks from the Orange County Public Schools. Well, Amanda, what kind of impact do you think these in-school programs are having on people's awareness of the rules and getting them safer on the streets?
Well, Orange County Public Schools is a partner of Best Foot Forward. And in my personal opinion, they are the game changer here for long-term behavior change. Because quite frankly, when you teach your child to use a crosswalk and mom is getting ready to blow through a crosswalk or says, let's just cross here, and your six-year-old says, absolutely not, mom, let's go do this, the parent starts paying attention. So it's really looking at the child to educate the parent. You can look at campaigns like seatbelt campaigns. You can look at the smoking campaigns as well. It really just starts in the school. And for long-term behavior change here, that is the game changer.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Ruth, this month there's been some extra law enforcement. OPD and the Orange County Sheriffs have been out on the streets at some of those intersections doing some enforcement and education.
Yes, sir.
How have those activities gone?
They've gone well. Clearly, we see that there needs to be more awareness on all three parts, bicyclists, pedestrians, and motorists. When we were working on motorists not yielding to people in a sidewalk at several locations, we had pedestrians right in front of us just not use a crosswalk. There was maybe 30 yards between two crosswalks, probably even closer, and they would walk across the road in between the two marked, signalized crosswalks.
Mm-hmm. What do motorists say when you pull them over and say, look, you just blasted through a zebra crossing there and there was a person waiting to cross the road? What do they tell you?
I'd say the bulk of the answers are they weren't aware of what they needed to do. The other half of that is they didn't even see us. I don't know if you saw the one where the camera person almost got run over mm-hmm. at the intersection. He didn't see us at all.
Just as a quick primer, what are the basic rules if you're a motorist? What should you be aware of?
Well, the basic rules as a motorist is you need to pay attention. Every time you approach a crosswalk, there's a yellow diamond-shaped sign with a pedestrian picture on it. It says pedestrians ahead. It'll usually say pedestrians next half mile, things of that nature. There'll also be an arrow pointing down to the crosswalk as you approach that. There may be a flashing yellow light. The best engineered ones, the ones that have flashing yellow lights, with the signage as well as lights in the actual roadway. Mm-hmm. Those we see, we get the most amount of yields at locations like that. As they approach, if there's a pedestrian at the sidewalk looking like they're about to cross, they need to stop and yield to allow that pedestrian to cross the road.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking to Orlando Police Sergeant Rich Ruth, also joined by Von Fusco and Amanda Day. We're talking about pedestrian safety and the effort to bring down the fatality and injury rate here in Central Florida. You can join the conversation online. You can find us on Facebook. You can send us a tweet. You can also send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. Well, Amanda Day, let me come back to you. Engineering, as you said, is one of the best foot forward coalition's means of trying to tackle this problem and bring down the fatality and injury rate. What are some things that cities and counties here in Central Florida are doing engineering-wise to try and tackle this issue?
Part of the best foot forward kind of approaches is looking at engineering education as well as enforcement, and working with the Orlando Police Department on that front as well as the Sheriff's Office. But regarding engineering, what we are doing is that we are looking at about 33 crosswalks in the city of Orlando and Orange County. And for those roads that are about 35 mile per hour and less, we're looking at as what I would dub, and I'm not an engineer, as a low-cost engineering enhancements. So when you're driving around the city of Orlando and other places in Orange County, you will see in-street signs saying yield. And just having that sign alone, when a car approaches, subconsciously they see something in the road and they do start slowing down. What we have found at those crosswalks where we're doing enforcement and also education in the sense of working with the homeowners and in that neighborhood and businesses, and those types of engineering improvements, we will see yield rates increase. So that means more drivers are yielding when you have all three going on there. And the goal there is then once you can improve yield rates, let's say at those crosswalks, then we start expanding.
Mm-hmm. The challenge, though, is for the higher speed roads, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I know that the yield rates are coming down quite significantly. There's 35 mile an hour and less speed roads, but 45 and up, it's pretty hard to make a dent in that.
Oh, very, very hard. What we found last year is that those yield rates on the crosswalks that we were observing on 40 mile per hour and higher started out at 1%, excuse me, meaning only 1% of the people were yielding, jumped up to maybe 5%. After a year of enforcement, engineering, and education. As the coalition partners got together, and that's Metroplan and Orange County and the city of Orlando, the engineers said, okay, this is massive engineering improvements. So if you look at, you know, OBT, Oak Ridge, Cimarron, the Florida Department of Transportation is working on this as well, you're going to start seeing a lot more enhancements, not just lighting, but you're going to be seeing looking at possibly even pedestrian bridges in certain areas as well. So as this is a very collective effort, and to change behaviors, as I say, we can't just engineer our way out of it, but it's certainly one big step forward.
Sergeant Ruth, what about educating law enforcement officers? What kind of process goes on to make sure that they're, you know, up on the pedestrian rules and what to do if they're pulling somebody over for you know, those kind of infringements?
We're working on that. The unit that I work in is primarily directed at traffic enforcement. Of course, we ride the motorcycles and we unfortunately write the most tickets. So we're going to be the most familiar with the laws. The pedestrian law alone has 19 subsections in it. So it's kind of an in-depth, very long, little nuances can change which subsection. And only about three of those subsections actually deal with drivers. The other 16 deal with pedestrians. And there's a whole other statute on bike offenses. So many of our people in my unit, of course, are aware of those. We're working with patrol, letting them know what they should be looking at. Unfortunately, we do a lot of accidents. With the accidents, it'll ultimately be listed as cause of accident, careless driving, when maybe they could get a little more specific. Would help us statistically to show what really is causing it other than just careless driving.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you're working on as part of this program? Do you try and keep more detailed stats on how those accidents are caused?
Yes, sir, absolutely. We're looking for more detailed stats. Anything we can do to make it more detailed helps us understand how we can approach to fix the problem and bring the awareness to the community as well as law enforcement.
Amanda Day, what about funding? You have some money, obviously, to run the Best Foot Forward Coalition. Do you need more? Do you want to expand it?
Yes, of course. We'd like to expand the program into Seminole County as well as Osceola County. And I know that's something that Metro Plan Orlando is working on here. And, you know, really what Best Foot Forward is that all of the coalition partners, as I said, including OCPS and enforcement and the Trauma Center, and is advocating on what they are doing collectively and really getting a focus effort and a messaging out there to the public to, as we said, educate them and remind them that they must yield to pedestrians, and pedestrians should not run out in the middle of the street in front of cars as well. It's a two-way message there. And again, yes, we want to expand Seminole County, Osceola County, statewide, you name it.
Mm-hmm. Some of the engineering fixes you were talking about before are quite expensive, though, mm-hmm. right? Like pedestrian bridges, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get money for that?
That's actually through, of course, Orange County and the City of Orlando, Metro Plan, and even FDOT for that matter. So really, you know, as far as Best Foot Forward, when we're sitting around collectively and looking at the problems and the challenges, is what does those engineering fixes look like? And is that part of the county's plan now, or can we put it on their 2 to 3 year plan down the road as well? And kind of then they, as far as the county and the city, then go back and say, can we, you know, is there money for this? Can we advocate for this? Also, too, on the other side is that a lot of the advocates and people out there, when we're out there, it's like, how can I get involved? And so they are writing and emailing their commissioners and city councilmen and mayors and saying, we need to do something about it in our neighborhood. And that's part of what we're doing, is going out and talking to homeowner association groups and nonprofits about it, the problem and the challenge as well, and getting them involved.
And commuter rail, that's going to be starting up this year. How does that change the equation?
It really means we need to ramp up even more. And working with the City of Orlando and Orange County, there's going to be more people on the street. I mean, we're all a pedestrian at some point. And a lot of the messaging, you know, around SunRail and commuter rail is, of course, ride it, which we all want to do, but once you get off, then what? And the City of Orlando, what they are looking at and is, you know, looking at continuous sidewalks, is ADA accessible? How do you get someone from that station to their place of business? And you'll start to see even more of the engineering enhancements. And what we're trying to do is work with them on what are those messaging sides to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, too, just to wrap up, Sergeant Ruth, how long do you think it's going to take to change the image of Orlando, or even, you know, from a practical point of view, bring that accent right down and have it so people don't look at Orlando and say, this is a city where it's dangerous to walk?
Well, it's not overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to a year or two. If we can just continue to lower the rate of accidents, the awareness, you bring the awareness out, you may still have an accident, but if people are aware, they're quicker to react, they're slower in their speeds, therefore the injuries are less severe. So I see, you know, it's going to take a little bit. It's going to be an ongoing effort. 2 years, 3 years down the line, I still see us doing this and continuing it.
And Amanda, Best Foot Forward, what's the long-term plan? How long do you think it's going to be around for?
The plan is at least 5 years, and to get the collective engineering and enforcement and education message out. But to answer your question for when you're going to really see some long-term culture change, I mean, it took us about 30 or 40 years to get to this point. And talking to engineers and planners, saying it's going to take about that long to change it. Because, again, you're looking at land development planning and engineering and reconstructing some of these streets. It's going to take a long time.
I've been speaking to Amanda Day. She's the project director for Best Foot Forward, a coalition to improve pedestrian safety. Also joined by Von Fusco. He was hit by a vehicle while crossing on foot across Colonial Drive in 2012. And Police Sergeant, Orlando Police Sergeant Rich Ruth. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, a conversation about the state of the nation's roads, rails and other infrastructure with writer Dan McNichol. I'm joined in the studio now by Dan McNichol. He's embarked on the Dire States Tour. Dan, if you would, just explain, what's the tour about? What are you trying to illustrate here? What's going on?
Sure. I'm on a kind of quixotic circumnavigation of America. It's a tour that began in Boston on October 3rd, and I've been circling the country. I'm right now in the car is parked in Washington, D.C. I've done about 10,000-plus miles so far, and just a short ways away from Boston right now.
And what kind of car is it?
The car is a 1949 Hudson. It's a Commodore 8. That's the model. And it's as old and rusty and energy defunct as America's infrastructure. So this original Detroit lead sled is a metaphor, a rolling metaphor for America's broken infrastructure.
How many miles have you put on it?
If, strangely, the car was a barn find, barn dust. We found it. It had been sitting in a barn for over half a century with 30,000 miles on it, 30,000 original miles. We bought it from the original family estate, and I've put those next 10, 11,000 miles on it.
How does it run? Does it run pretty good?
It took a lot of work to get it ready, and it's running really well. Mm-hmm. We've named her Mrs. Martin after the original owner. We want to keep the good spirits with us, and she's a flathead 6. It's all original, unrestored, and she's capable of highway speeds downhill.
So what's the big issue you see with the roads? Is it simple fixes like potholes? Is it bigger picture things like whether to expand current roads or not? What's going on there?
Oh, hell no. Unfortunately, it's not a matter of fixing potholes. Our systems are broken. All of our key systems are ailing. And I say that in both the critical and crisis-oriented way and also just as a state of not keeping things up. Our stack ranking in the world, and this is not mine or an interest group's point of view, but the World Economic Forum that brings us the G20 meeting, their stack rankings put us 8 years ago at number one, and now we are number 14. And that's our demise coupled with the rest of the world's rise.
And that's in terms of the infrastructure, so roads, rails, things like that?
Exactly. People think of rolling stock, they think of movement, transportation, make up 7 categories of infrastructure. There are 16 total that also include levees and dams and water systems and schools and parks.
How does Florida stack up in comparison to other states? Are we pretty much on a par with other states in terms of how good our roads are or how bad?
No. It's very encouraging to come down here to the Sunshine State and see this pride in structures. And they get it. I mean, if government is what we do together, infrastructure is what we build together. And Florida has a great thing to call out. They have B's in their grades. Very few states have any categories that reach B, but in aviation, bridges here all get that B classification. And the total grade point average in Florida is a C. So yes, Florida's doing much better. Still a C student. Sad that a C student is the magna cum laude of the class, but yes.
Mm-hmm. What about things happening here in Central Florida? I'm not sure if you're familiar with SunRail, but we've got a commuter rail system which is going to start operating this year. It's a bit of a sea change for people, so to speak, who are used to driving everywhere in Florida. What's that going to do for infrastructure?
You know, I think Florida has a habit of going out up front. The idea of a Florida Turnpike, 1953, that was not common knowledge. That was not common thinking in the states back in the day. And just the same way, I think Florida's waking up to the fact that, you know, we've developed quickly, maybe too quickly. Let's see what smarter development looks like. Let's see what a transit system looks like. Let's see what high-speed rail looks like. Let's see what higher-speed rail looks like. Let's see what bike lanes look like. Why not? And I'm sensing it's analytical, but it's also, I think, it's real. When you mm-hmm. have a Secretary of Transportation who's championing road building, also saying, let's build bike lanes, I think that's remarkable.
If you look at the way the United States tackles infrastructure compared to other countries, and you talked about that list and how the U.S. has fallen in the rankings compared to other countries, is there another country we should be looking at for an example of how to improve?
No offense to the emerging market called Malaysia, but we shouldn't be looking at them. We shouldn't be trailing them. So, yeah, I would say it's a healthy blend. You know, what we haven't done very successfully here is look at private investment, and that's gotten to be a really dangerous subject to bring up politically. But come on, all of Asia uses private money to build public structures. You'd be surprised how many structures in China are built with Hong Kong money. And you'd be surprised, too, that the number of dollars spent privately in public infrastructure in Canada. There's probably no place more similar to us than Canada that's not us. And they spend $25 for every 100 privately. We spend 1. We're almost a $1 trillion construction industry in the United States alone. So if we go from 1% to 25% or just 2%, double it up, you start to see where we have a lot of potential. And that's what Florida does really well. The Port of Miami Tunnel is a private initiative. the idea of building some of these systems, like I-4 improvements or hot lanes, you call them, high occupancy tolling lanes, it's a great way to get a project off the ground and going. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't care so much how we pay for it. We just need to pay for it. We just need to get it done.
What about, isn't there a counter argument, though? I feel like, you know, with infrastructure, with roads, airports, rail, anything you can build, I mean, you could make it, you could pour as much money as possible into it. There are endless numbers of improvements you could make. Isn't it kind of a bottomless pit? I mean, is there also a counter argument that says we should be actually getting people off roads and just kind of looking at other options as well as just building more?
I would go back to the analogy of a three-legged stool. We have overdeveloped ourselves with roads and bridges. We've overdeveloped ourselves with aviation, or we're certainly advanced in aviation, but we so sorely lack in mass transit. Half of all Americans don't even have legitimate access to mass transit. That's ridiculous. The cities are becoming a very popular place to live. Millennials no longer want to be in toll booths and in lines and in traffic. They want to be online in a bus. The fastest growing mode of transportation is intercity buses. So why not make good use of that asset we have, that asset class called roads, and put smarter systems on them? And I think the biggest game changer that's really exciting is the driverless vehicle. You know, they used to call carriages horseless carriages. That was a car, you know, without a horse. Why do we need a driver? We just don't. And you'll see a lot more efficiencies, a lot less death, a lot more use of valuable infrastructure.
But how far into the future is that?
Today.
But for mass consumption? I mean, driverless vehicles?
Sadly, that's our own inhibitions and our own limits. But the technology is waiting. Mm-hmm. And it's there. And in a lot of states, there are laws on the books, like in California, that says you can have a driverless car on the road.
What do we do until then, though? Because I get the sense that driverless cars, you know, and at any time they become a majority of the vehicles on the roads, that's still quite some way off. So until we get to that stage, what do you do?
Well, that rubs me, and you're right, unfortunately. Vehicle-to-vehicle technology is probably the next step towards driverless. So cars talking to cars, vehicle-to-vehicle.
And you're talking about things like a car sensing when it's time to brake, when to accelerate, how to avoid accidents?
Every 10 times every second, my car talks to your car. What are you thinking about doing? What are you going to do? Oh, what are you doing? You're braking, you're going, you're turning. And those kind of communications constantly going on allow much safer travel, much more compact travel. You can pack more cars in. You can tailgate a little bit better. We do it anyway, but you could do it safely this way. And that's, I think, the baby step towards letting go of the wheel. But jumbo planes land at airports all the time with the pilots not at the wheel the way mm-hmm. that we think they are. And why not cars?
It's kind of a dim view, though, isn't it, of drivers, because it's not that hard to use your indicator to actually be aware and drive safely, but people don't seem to do it.
Well, I have a dim view of my own driving sometimes, certainly other drivers. I've been traveling all around the country, and I would rather trust an onboard computer than someone texting with a cup of coffee, rushing to pick up somebody or do some errand. It's just mad how little we give our driving, how little attention we give our driving.
I've been speaking to Dan McNichol. He's on the Dire States tour, drawing attention to the poor state of the United States infrastructure. But of course, Florida gets relatively good marks, so we can pat ourselves on the back for that. Dan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Matthew. Thanks for having me. It's been a thrill.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.